welcome to another episode of GT Radio. Boy, am I excited about this show tonight. We have a guy on our show tonight that comes from humble beginnings and was told multiple times that he couldn't do something, and he rose to the occasion and he did it. Welcome, Ray Pinot, to the show.
Well, Tino, thank you for having me on. It's appreciate you inviting me to be on the show, and I look forward to being with you this evening.
Perfect, perfect. We're going to have some fun. So let's start about where you grew up and where you were born. These are humble roots. Describe a little bit about your upbringing and the place where you grew up.
Sure. I was born in a town in southeastern Connecticut called Norwich. It's kind of a small blue-collar town. Grew up with my parents and three sisters. I actually was raised about probably less than 10 miles from where I work today. But when I was growing up, the Mohegan Sun Resort was not here and was built in 1996. And I was born just a few years before that. I grew up in a small town with a relatively small school. Stayed in Connecticut most of my life. I was educated in Norwich, stayed in the same house as a child, and then I kind of moved on and went to UConn. So I stayed in Connecticut for my bachelor's degree, and eventually went on to attend law school in Connecticut as well. So I've basically been born and raised in Connecticut in the United States, and have lived here my whole life.
So your town was also the home of Pfizer, right? And and you grew up in the home where your parents also grew up, right?
My father and our whole family lived with my grandparents. So it was a two-family house in Norwich, Connecticut. And, the main industries here are Pfizer, Electric Boat, the Nuclear Underwater System Center. So there's a lot of Navy shipment here and a lot of sub repair here. And my father actually grew up working for the government repairing subs.
Yeah, it was just kind of a blue-collar, down-low nothing flashy. Let's just say that. Go ahead.
I was going to say my father grew up as a machinist, a tool and die maker. I'm very proud of the fact that through his career, God bless his soul, he's moved on several years now. But he actually, for the government, had designed three patents on repairs for subs that he designed on his own. Coming from a background with a high school education and never been to college, but was obviously very skilled at his trade.
Yeah, and now you had a childhood dream of becoming a lawyer, right?
So ever since I was a young child, I don't even know why. I don't know if I saw some show, but I was determined to be a lawyer. Coming from our humble beginnings, my parents did the best they could, but they weren't going to be able to afford 7 years of education for me. I went to undergraduate school at UConn. I got out and got a job, and 5 years after coming out, I decided to go back to law school on my own at night while I was still working, and I feel very fortunate to have been able to graduate from Quinnipiac School of Law.
Yeah, so you worked and went to school at the same time to pay for your education, right?
Yeah, in fact, Quinnipiac is located kind of in the middle of the Connecticut, and partially through my career before I came to the resort operations here, I was working for a finance company, and I was actually traveling from New York to Hamden, Connecticut, which is probably about an hour and 20 minutes to leave work and get to class, and then obviously spend my time on weekends making sure I could keep up with all the homework and get all the work done to graduate.
So you had this work ethic in you already from a young age, because you saw your parents and it a lot of hard work. That was ingrained in you, wasn't it?
No doubt. Both my parents worked exceptionally hard. Like I said, they never made a tremendous amount of money, but they provided a tremendous amount of support for us kids. And my father, worked a lot of overtime, and he traveled to Newport News and out to California to work on subs and pick up extra shifts and extra money to help support the whole family. So, and my mother, while she was raising four kids, she would take part-time jobs at night. And when we got old enough to take care of ourselves, went to back to work herself in the school system. So my parents always had jobs, always worked hard, and always instilled in all of us kids that, you know, hard work was important to everybody.
That's yeah, that's the key, and most of my guests, they point to that one single thing. How did you get into the casino business?
So several years back, so start with the fact that my mother is a tribal member. And she reached out to me. I was living in the western part of Connecticut. And like I said, the resort operation was located in southeastern Connecticut. And I had been a recent graduate from law school, been working about 4 years as a lawyer in Long Island. And the tribe was actually looking for an attorney to bring on. They needed a senior staff attorney as they were growing and expanding. So my mother told me about the opportunity. I came here and met with one of our management board members who had reached out to me, and I came in and I started my career in the resort operations business, actually working with the tribe as an in-house senior staff attorney.
Got it. So you came on board as an attorney, as one of the staff attorneys, right?
Actually for the tribe and not the casino. I began my first 4 years in the industry working with the tribe, but the tribe was very generous to me and afforded me opportunities to work with the casino. So when Bill Velarde was here and Mitchell Ettis, they were doing things to expand the resort operation, not only growing the size of the operation, but they were in the process of buying the first professional sports team by a tribe. And they were very generous to allow me to get involved in being the tribal's representative on their finance documents, to be the tribal representative with the NBA on purchasing the WNBA team that we ultimately moved here from Orlando. So they gave me a lot of opportunity to get exposure to the casino, even though I was the an attorney for the tribe.
Got it. You, but the opportunity didn't come just because of who you were. It became you had to prove you actually did the work and worked your way up the ranks, right?
Oh, absolutely. From like I said, from a young child, my parents teaching me work hard. You know, I would be the first in the office. I'd be the last to leave. I had someone that was a very close associate at the time, who has since retired, who was the CFO at the tribe at the time, who we would work together late at night to make sure that we were, you know, doing everything that was in the best interest of the organization, and showing that, we're willing to put in the time and do the hard work that was needed to provide the best effort we could.
Ray, what are the toughest parts of your job?
You know, it's funny because before I came here, I had another career, a couple other careers, and, you know, there's always challenges and pitfalls with every job. And I came here, and between the management board, between, you know, the CEO leadership, you know, coming here is a joy every day. I think the people that I work with are the best people that I've ever worked with in my entire life. I'm fortunate to have the people around me to support me and as team members to support me. And I don't find the job tough any day. Things change all the time, and there's always going to be, you know, guest service issues we have to deal with or changes in the industry. But it's just a joy to come here because of the atmosphere that's been created about, you know, teamship, cooperation, you know, living by our core values and really valuing every team member's opinion and just working cooperatively together. I don't think anything I do is a challenge or difficult. I think it's fun and exciting and something new every day.
Ray, you had some great mentors, and you have some great mentors still. It's a two-part question. Number one, how important is mentorship to people? And number two, what are the most valuable lessons that you've learned from your mentors?
I think having a mentor is invaluable. When you're young and impetuous and not worldly and not attuned to corporate culture, I shouldn't say everybody, tend to do things maybe rashly or quickly, or not understanding how things really work. And having someone to sit there and mentor you who's been through, you know, the ringers, who's been through, you know, a big corporate culture, and understanding how, you know, a family business works, how a multi, how a billion-dollar business works, can be invaluable to teach you how to act in those situations. You know, Mitchell Ettis has been a tremendous mentor of mine. We still meet to this day, although he's technically retired. He's, you know, been kind enough to continue to spend time and work with me and continue to make sure that he passes on his knowledge to me. You know, one of the things he taught me very early in my career, you know, as a leader, is to, first of all, build trust with your team. You know, I always look to hire people that are smarter than me because they tend to make me look better. I love having tremendously intelligent people who know their business. I have people around me who have 30 years of gaming experience, people who have 25 years of HR experience, CFOs who have 28 years of experience. I will never have the specific knowledge they have in their areas based on their experience and time. And surrounding yourself with good people is invaluable. You know, learning patience, you know, when a leader speaks, team members tend to shy away and believe a decision's been made or the leader's spoken and the discussion's over. You know, allow your team members to express their ideas and give their thoughts because, you know, none of us know everything. And hearing feedback from others can give you thoughts and ideas on how to really shape an issue or resolve a question that comes along.
Ray, what would your advice be to the younger generation coming up through the ranks? And we've talked about the hard work, we've talked about the patience, but not everybody gets to run the joint, and you did. If someone's aspiring to get that far, what do they need to do? What separates them from the other people that won't get that far?
Well, listen, I think, you know, one of the things a lot of people talk about with this generation is be patient. You know, this generation isn't going to walk in and be the vice president of a department. They need to work their way up. They need to earn their stripes. They need to, you know, go through the ringers. They have to put in the hard work and they have to put in the time. But I think one of the most important thing that young people could learn besides working hard and having a mentor and learning in an organization is building relationships. You know, we're a service organization, and we have our success based on the success of a team. And if you're going at it alone and think you know everything or think you have the answers to everything, then you're not building those relationships and the trust with your team members, because you need those team members in an organization this size to support you. Because if they're not going to support you, they're going to be battling against you, and it's not going to be success as a team.
So you're saying the teamwork is probably one, other than the hard work and the patience, it's being able to get along with people that's really important, right?
100%. You know, you need to have the relationships not only within the team you're working with. So say you're coming up through marketing, having great relationships within marketing, but across departments. So marketing touches so many different areas within the organization, as each one does, and building those relationships outside of your department. So when you're moving forward, you know who to turn to when you have a question that's related to finance and you're in a bigger position. And, you know, so having those relationships and having their trust, then people are going to support you and they're going to do everything they can to help you succeed.
Ray, we know that, you know, 20 years ago, there was only two or three gaming centers in the United States. Now there's hundreds, over 1,000. And the gaming landscape is changed. How has it changed, and what do the native casinos need to watch out for?
I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head. Gaming has just proliferated, not to be disparaging to governments, but a lot of governments are seeing taxes on gaming operations as a cure to their own financial ills or creating additional revenue dollars to the states. And as a result, you know, when I started in this industry a couple of years back in Connecticut. We were considered a duopoly. There was us and Foxwoods. Our closest competitor was New Jersey. And then there was a small little facility in Rhode Island, but didn't even have table games at the time. So the Northeast market was really ours unto ourselves. Since that time, you've seen gaming crop up in Massachusetts. New Hampshire's talking about it. Rhode Island's expanded. Pennsylvania has gaming. Maryland has gaming. D.C. has gaming. I mean, I can go on and on and where it's going. So the landscape of gaming is that a slot machine and a table game is a commodity. Anybody can have it. You can put it anywhere. You can put it in a gas station. You can, you know, you can put it in a hotel. It doesn't really matter. So gaming unto itself is not anything that's unique unto itself. I think that, you know, what we focus on and what's most important to us is a guest experience. So it's, we're not inviting guests here to come here to game. We're inviting guests to come here and have a good time, to enjoy themselves, you know, between our hotel, between our spas, shopping, dining, the arena, you name it. We want guests here to come here and have a full entertaining experience, a resort operation experience. And what's most important to us is that we distinguish ourselves by our guest experience. Guests have thousands of different places where they can choose to go and spend their disposable income, and we want to convince them that this is the place they want to come because it's memorable, it's fun, and it's something that they want to repeat doing because it provides that great guest experience to them.
Now, the idea of cooperation and building relationships, it dates back, way back to your elders, two or three generations ago, because I know that the survival of the tribe was based on its leaders who didn't want to fight the Americans but decided to cooperate with them. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. I mean, this goes back to, you know, the founding principles of Chief Uncas and you know, centuries ago, where, you know, there was a choice made upon, you know, settlers moving into the states. At the time, there were certain tribes that chose the path of fighting and trying to eject them from the land, whereas our Chief Uncas chose the path of making friends with the settlers and being cooperative and being a part of the community and welcoming them. And those principles live with the tribe today, and they continue with the tribe, and they're fundamentally so important to the tribe to continue on that path.
Yeah, so the root, what I get from this too is not only are we talking about relationships in terms of present day, but it's a fundamental sort of heritage with the Mohican tribe that cooperation and team building even dates back to the beginning of the tribe itself, where they have to fight for survival. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. That is the path that they chose, and that's the path for over 300 years that the tribe has chosen to continue to follow, a path of cooperation. I mean, when I think about it, you know, when you think about, okay, Chief Uncas and the story of Chief Uncas, you know, that we all as tribal members have been told through generations as he cooperated with settlers. But in, you know, the early 1900s when the tribe was, you know, reestablishing its reservation and going for recognition, they befriended the state of Connecticut. They worked with the state of Connecticut. Mm-hmm. They went to the legislature of the state of Connecticut and the governor and said, let's work together on this. We're not looking to fight you. Let's figure out how we make this work cooperatively. And quite honestly, since that day, I think we've maintained an outstanding relationship with the state of Connecticut and the legislators and the town of Montville, because the tribal leadership at the time went to the town of Montville and said, let's talk about this. Let's talk about, you know, we're federally recognized now. How do we make it work for the town, and how do we make it work for the tribe?
Yeah, that's very important. And for all our listeners, that's a major thing, because not all tribes were fortunate to have that kind of leadership, and a lot of tribes got wiped out, right? Because of that.
You know, the history is replete, and Connecticut is no stranger to this. There were tribes that, you know, there are people who claim to have ancestral ties to other tribes in the state of Connecticut, but they didn't survive. They didn't survive as a tribal leadership. They didn't survive as an organization, because what they did is battle and chose to fight against either the state of Connecticut or the settlers, and as a result, they became so disbanded they weren't able to maintain their identity. Whereas the Mohegan tribe, to this day, you can come to the town of Montville, and there'll be things that have Mohegan names in it. And it's just so ingrained in the community, you can tell that the community accepted the Mohegan tribe as a partner.
Why do you think that they had the wherewithal to understand that concept and embrace it and be successful at it, because that's very deep. That goes back to, you know, your ancestors. It's not something that they read in a book.
No, and I, you know,
what
I wish I could.
That to?
What I attribute it to is, you know, the great leader Chief Uncas, for whatever reason, and I, you know, going back 300 years, couldn't get into his mind, but he had the foresight to understand that cooperation was the way to go. And you know what? Since that time, since Chief Uncas chose that path, the leadership of the tribe has continued down that path and said, this is the proper way to go. This is in the best interest of the Mohegan tribe, and this is the best interest of us as a people. And to continue us, we want to be cooperative. We want to be a part of the community, and we continue that to this day. So, you know, great Chief Uncas had that vision. And, you know, we've been very fortunate that our leaders since have continued to follow that path.
Yeah, it's amazing that something that happened 300 years ago still prevails today, and that story is told over and over. It's a pretty fascinating thing that I found about your tribe.
Yeah,
let
it's pretty
me,
exciting. It's great to have those principles.
Yeah. One of the things that I find fascinating about you guys is that you guys have set yourself up for the future, and you became a resort before anybody else even thought about it. Where did that come from? How could you? Because business is about positioning yourself for the future, and how were you guys able to do that before anybody even thought about it?
Well, I think that you know, and I'll give credit to the management boards that were in place in the early 2000s, and Bill Velardo, who was the president of the organization back in the early 2000s, late 1990s, that, you know, when they looked at the organization, they said, okay, you know, gaming is obviously very profitable and a fruitful operation, but how do we expand the tribe? How do we expand our sphere of influence? How do we, you know, grow the organization? You know, one of the things that the Mohegan tribe is fundamentally based upon is the preservation of the tribe, 13 generations of the past and 13 generations of the future. So, you know, it's having a long-term vision, and I think our management board at the time, along with Bill Velardo, had the vision that, yeah, gaming's nice and it's a nice step, but how do we preserve this for the next 13 generations? How do we make sure we're taking care of our grandchildren's grandchildren's grandchildren's, so when we're all not here anymore, it's not just a gaming hall, but we have something we can proud of and leave to our kids and their kids for generations to come that's sustainable. And that's where they had these ideas of, okay, you know, the gaming operations is doing fantastic, but let's continue to grow our operations. And then, you know, as time went on in the mid-2000s, they said, you know, we need to expand to other areas too, because like any business, if you sit stagnant and say, okay, I'm protected forever, you know, things will eventually dry up. We need to move on. We need to expand, and we need to look for other opportunities. And as a result, not only have we grown this into a resort operation, but, you know, the leadership has actually grown the organization as a whole to look to other areas and expand our areas of influence.
Yeah, and spread your wings to other businesses too, correct?
That is correct. You know, not only do we here at the resort operation have other operations, including Pennsylvania and Washington and Louisiana and moving into Niagara soon and so forth, but the tribes also expanded their sphere of influence of getting into, you know, some copier business, some restaurant businesses, and purchasing land and doing other things to expand their business acumen and influence.
So a lot of people talk about, you know, the younger generation, and the, you know, they don't like to gamble. And, you know, is this true, and what is the solution?
So number one, I think that whether or not the young generation likes to gamble, that the jury is still out on that. I think there's a strong argument to be made that the younger generation doesn't control a majority of the wealth in the country yet, even though they're a larger generation, that the younger generation is still in the process of advancing their careers and growing their income, and their amount of disposable income is not what their parents or grandparents is. So whether or not they're gamers, I think, is still yet to be seen. But I even think that at this age, when they do go out and spend money, they do like table games and the interaction and the social interaction. So I do think there is some evidence that the younger generation does like to game. It's just, will they choose a slot machine versus a table game? I think at their young age, they're choosing table games, but that doesn't mean it's not going to change over time. But I think that while they're in their young age, and obviously we need to, as an organization, appeal to a broad spectrum of guests, that we need to find ways that appeal to them to come here. And when they do have opportunities to get out and spend time with friends, we want to be the place that they choose. So that may be nightclubs. That may be fantastic restaurants. It may be, you know, having the poker rooms or having you know, nightclubs with gaming in them, something that we're currently working on. So I think the jury's still out on whether or not they're actually gamers, but as an organization, we need to adapt to that younger generation and what they want now and try to capture them so we build their loyalty for long term.
Yeah, and the margins might not be as high, but you still want them to come in, right? Grab that revenue.
Well, we want to grab the revenue, and obviously we still want to make money on it, and I know that we still can, but we also want to build their loyalty. So 10 years from now, maybe their gaming habits change. Maybe they want to find other forms of entertainment. And because they've become familiar with Mohegan Sun, they're loyal to Mohegan Sun, and they've enjoyed Mohegan Sun, so they say that, oh, we'll go back there and enjoy this part of it.
Yep. Positioning yourself for the future again. Ray, you're a busy guy. I mean, you're running a lot of stuff. How do you balance personal with your business? Because we're a 24-hour business. How does that work with you?
Well, I'm a strong believer in family first. You know, I had my CFO the other day, his son was playing in his last high school basketball game. And I forget what project we were working on, but he's like, you know, I have this coming up. I know you got to get this done. I'm like, you will never, ever get this time back again. You will never see your son's last basketball game. You'll get the work done. I have confidence in you that you'll get it done. So, you know, like now, you know, I'm sitting in my office this evening in Eastern Connecticut time zone working late. I had a lot of stuff to get done. But on Saturday, my daughter has a lacrosse game. I'm going to go to my daughter's lacrosse game. I mean, I think that, you know, in balancing it, it's, you know, working hard, but don't miss out on those moments because you won't get them back. And I don't want to be retired and say, oh, my God, I wish I had been there for this and have missed that special moment. So family is very, very important to me. All my team knows that I believe in family, and they're strong supporters of making sure that their team members get there for opportunities to enjoy their families.
Ray, your tribe is very smart. And like I said, it dates back 300 years with the whole cooperation. You've done a lot of things right. What is your message to Native Nations to position themselves for the future? What is your message to them?
I think that if I had anything to say to other organizations is look to the future. You know, there's a lot of there's several Native Nations that still have that are still doing tremendously well and you know, to some expense are flourishing tremendously. Don't just bask in the glory that you have now. Think about the future. Think about the, you know, survival of the organization. Think about the survival of the tribe going long-term. And what are the things that position you to be a long-term thinker? And how do you make sure that you're built, we're big believers here in Jim Collins' book, Built to Last, that your organization is built to last, that you're sustainable for generations to come.
Great stuff. Should we take some calls?
Sure.
Let's do it. Hang on one second. All right. This is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Ray?
Yeah, Tino, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. How are you?
Oh, awesome. Good. It's Rubio for Helio.
How you doing, Rogelio? How you doing? Good.
Good. Sorry, I'm walking around in a grocery store, but I had to listen to this interview here. Hey, Ray, you touched on a little bit of good mentors in your life, and what you've taken from that. What are the items you would you find yourself doing or would give advice to other people that are mentoring someone else? What are the key components or key traits you think is in a good leader, good mentor that maybe you're practicing yourself with others or you would give advice to someone else?
I think that in being a mentor, that one of the most important things you can do with your team is build their trust, right? You always have to have their back. You have to always be supporting them. You know, I've been very fortunate here, not only having a highly experienced team, but my team, believe it or not, is more than willing to tell me that you're just wrong. And we can sit there and argue for 30 minutes over something. And when
sure.
we walk out, we all, whether it was unanimous what we're going to do, you know, what we move forward with is what we've agreed to as a team. And that's what, and there's no, oh my God, I didn't agree with that decision or I would never do that. It's okay, this is what we're doing and we're moving forward. Your team, when I'm mentoring people, you have to be willing to be humble enough to be able to hear that you might just be wrong on something. You may have analyzed something incorrectly, and you need to hear other people's opinions on what is the appropriate way to go. And I think the other thing, too, is always showing empathy. Everybody has issues and concerns that come up in their lives. Those are it may not be important to you, or you may not find their particular issue important, but it's important to them. Show empathy for what's important to them and making sure you're understanding your team members' concerns and you're reacting to it appropriately.
Okay. Well, I got another – I love that answer. I really do. I got another question, and it has to do with more on the tribal side. I think it's great when I'm a tribal member in Arizona and I work for my tribe and their property off and on about 6-7 years now. As a tribal member of your own tribe and working at your property, what would you say, what would your motto be to other tribal members working with their tribe's property of giving back to their community, maybe doing something, you know, just not just going to work or just being there like a regular job. What would you set fire in those tribal members to really do something and contribute to the outcome and the better health of their own tribe?
You know, I, quite honestly, one of the things here that I think most successful tribal members have done here is they are very proud of their heritage and their tribal membership, but they don't use it as a sword to put themselves above other people. They let their hard work, they let their dedication, and they let their passion for the tribe show through and the work and commitment they have to the organization rather than using it as an expectation or a given that they're going to get something because they're tribal members. It shouldn't be given. It should be earned. And I think that all our successful tribal members here have worked so hard for their passion that, you know, quite honestly, this is our tribe, right? We should care more about it than you know, your normal team member should. And we should work harder to make it better, and we should display that on an everyday basis because this is about our family.
Right. Right. No, that's good. It's good stuff.
Great. Thank you so much, Rogelio.
Yep. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Have a great night.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Great. Let's take a look. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Ray?
I certainly do. Good evening, gentlemen. Ray, this is Heidi Antozana from Temecula, Southern California. How are you this evening?
I'm very good. How are you?
I am wonderful. Thank you. So, Ray, first thing I wanted to know is you mentioned one of the most important criteria for your success has been building relationships. What advice would you give people that want to build strong relationships? What practically do you do? What do you do to build and connect and build that trust?
Honesty. I think I could boil it down to one word of honesty.
Mm-hmm.
Never try to snowball your team. Never try to hide anything from them. You know, let them see your weaknesses and your strengths and be honest with them. So being up front, then they know anytime you're speaking to them, anytime you're having a conversation, anytime you're having a disagreement, you're being honest with them. You're not trying – there's no alternative agenda. It's being upfront and honest and having, you know, forthright conversations.
Wonderful. I love that. And my second question was, knowing – it's one of my favorite questions that I have is, knowing what you do today – what would you do different if you had to start in the gaming industry again?
Oh, God. You know, I would say what I would do differently is early in my career, you know, before or just when I was starting to meet Mitchell Edith, I would say that I was impetuous. I was somewhat of a know-it-all. And thought I knew more than I really did. And had I not had, you know, the mentoring from Mitchell Edis, and fortunately I did, you know, I would have never done those things. I think that the best thing you can do, or I could have done early in my career, was sit back, listen, and learn, and realize at a youngest age, you don't know everything. You have a lot to learn, and being patient and learning from people with more experience. And, you know, I was very fortunate to meet Mitchell Edis early in my career to understand that those things just were not going to go over well, and I had a lot to learn.
And Ray, what you haven't been and studied to be an attorney and practiced, obviously, what skills do you believe attorney skills serve you best in the role that you are now in, apart from negotiation, of course?
Well, quite honestly, I think the best thing that I ever learned in law school, which is applicable in a business setting, is question everything. You know, everybody likes to laugh about this, and I'll use this, is, you know, Bill Clinton said years ago, if you remember, what's the meaning of the, right? There's a, you know, and or, and just nothing is as it appears on its face. And make sure you're questioning everything and making sure that you get as much information as you can, because nothing is perfectly set as you see it on its face, and there's always something else that needs to be questioned. I think as an attorney, one thing you learn when you're looking at the law is it's so ambiguous that you need to question, what does this really mean, why does it mean it, and what's the best solution to get to an answer.
Wonderful. Just like Simon Sinek with the Why TED Talk that made him so famous.
Yep.
Thank you so much, and thank you, Tino, and all the best.
No, thank you.
Go well, Ray.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
You too.
Some great questions.
Yes.
Okay.
Tino?
Hello,
Ray?
This is Tino Magnata. You have a question for Ray? Yep, we're here.
Yeah. This is Bobby in Las Vegas. Hi, gentlemen.
Hey, Bobby, how are you?
Doing great. Ray, as marketing dollars are few and precious from time to time, or even when they're not so few, but even more precious sometimes, I was curious, where are you most comfortable making investments in your marketing, and where does it get a little more risky or feel a little more dangerous for you?
So that's, you know, that's a great question. You know, here in Connecticut, we're in the midst of added competition going on. So, you know, obviously,
sure,
looking at expenses and looking at marketing expenses is something that we're constantly doing a deep dive on. I think that where I feel most comfortable about marketing dollars, quite honestly, is on our loyal guests. You know, we do a lot of database mining. We have a lot of, you know, this industry has a lot of information on a lot of people, and finding the proper investment for the proper guests. You know, we do a lot of gathering information to understand what people want and when they want it. You know, what's more difficult, but I do truly believe in, But it's almost impossible to measure, are the advertising dollars, right? You know, when you're spending money on TV or radio or newspapers, or you're spending money with sports teams, you know, those things are much harder to measure. But I do think that brand recognition is exceptionally important to our organization. But when someone asks you, well, what was your return on that, you know, TV spot on the Grammys, which can be, you know, fairly expensive, You have viewerships, you have, you know, the advertising agency that has this number of impressions, and but there's no immediate return to that you can see and measure on a spreadsheet and a P&L. You just have to believe in the fact that seeing that number of viewerships, seeing the brand recognition is growing, and is growing your organization, and is growing our overall loyalty amongst our guests.
Thanks. If you're able to kind of project down the road, and I'm not trying to retire you or anything, but, you know, what would you like to be your personal legacy for your time spent at that wonderful property? And what are your hopes for the property's legacy? So, as I say, maybe 10, 15, 20 years down the road.
So I hope my own personal legacy, when I am no longer here, is that the team members that are here remember me and say he was a good leader and we were happy to work for him and we enjoyed working for him, and we hope that all of our leaders would have traits similar to Ray. So when I leave here, I'm hope the best praise I could get is from my team members here saying, yeah, we really liked him as a leader and wish him the best. You know, for a property, I mean, I think I kind of addressed this a little bit when we were talking with Tino. For the property, this property, we intend, or as an organization, and this property is a part of it, 13 generations to come. This is not something that we're looking to have a flash in the pan or something and fly by night or something that, you know, is going to struggle at some point in time. We're looking to have this here for 13 generations to come. We want to build a resort operation that people will come to well after I'm gone, well after my children are gone, and well after my children's children are gone, but are here sustainable for an ongoing foreseeable future.
Thanks very much. It was a pleasure speaking with you and listening to you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the questions.
Thanks a lot, Bobby. Have a good night. Hello, this is Tina Magnata. Do you have a question for Ray?
Hi, this is Millette from Las Vegas. How are you?
I'm excellent. How are you, Millette?
Doing great, thanks. So, you've had a lot of experience. Obviously, you've explained that through the interview, and it's really been enjoyable to listen to you. But in your current role, was there any, like, particular projects that you were really proud of? I mean, obviously, everything brings its own challenges. You know, when you're coming on a new project. But is there something in particular that that you're willing to share in that you've done in the past or in your current role that you've worked on and that you're really proud of, something that, you know, you're beating your chest on saying, hey, this is something that I've done, this is something that my team had done, and really want to put it on a pedestal? And so that's one question.
Yeah, and that's easy for me.
Okay.
What I would want to beat my chest about and say, oh my God, this is outstanding. You know, what we focus on, number one here, we're a service organization, is guest service, and you know, we send out thousands of surveys to our guests every week, and our guests love to tell us how we do. We get an average of 3,000 responses from our guests a week on how we perform. And what I can say I'm most proud of is our team. We get over 70% now of our responses on our survey saying we're doing an excellent job. Not good, not average, but excellent. So over the last 5 years, we've grown that to just under 60% to over 70% now. So well over 2% a year, we've grown our excellent scores with our guests. And I think that our focus and our team members' focus on guest service is just evident in how much they've been able to grow those scores and the tremendous job that they're doing every day in meeting the guests' needs. And again, this goes back to, you know, our philosophy is that happy guests, you know, it's, you know, a microcosm of the service profit chain, right? You have, you know, we think building loyal guests is by building building that superior guest service, and I think our team is doing it each and every day.
That's actually really great, and those numbers are obviously showing it, which kind of segues into my other question then is, one of the challenges, as with any service industry, is training and onboarding and retaining. So with those high guest service numbers, how are you doing that for your in-house team to make sure that stays consistent?
So there's a couple things, you know, I would say with respect to that. So number one, over, I think the number is about 25% of our team here has been here over 15 years. We've had a tremendous amount of retention at the organization. In fact, all of my three executive leaders here have been with the organization over 16 years, two of them since the day we opened. And I think that's a testament to the organization and the way that we treat people and the camaraderie that we've had and we've developed over the years. And when it comes to onboarding team members, because obviously everybody's going to have is going to have turnover, you know, we start with an interview process, even at the line level, which is a group interview process. And rather than hiring for skill set specifically, because most of the stuff that you that is done within our industry can be trained, is we're looking for the right people. So it's finding the right people who want to be in the guest service industry. I take the time generally, if I'm not traveling, to meet every new group in orientation, and I think I'm pretty candid with them that we're the guest service industry, that, you know, we focus on delivering superior guest service. Some people, that's not in your DNA, and if that's not, that's okay. This just isn't the right industry for you, because that's what's most important to us. So we're focusing on finding the people that want to service other customers and want to have that fun, happy feeling, because this should be a fun, happy place that people are coming to.
Okay, yeah, that sounds great. And if I can ask one more question, you're talking
about
– okay, thank you. You've talked about the future and the importance of the future, not only for Mohegan Sun, but also for the tribe itself. And so in from a business perspective and a gaming perspective, how is online gaming affecting Mohegan Sun and the challenges that you are dealing with, basically, in simple?
So, you know, we don't have specific examples of it here in Connecticut, because in Connecticut, it's play for fun. There is no online gaming that's actually authorized here in Connecticut. We do work with a property resorts in New Jersey who has, obviously, bricks and mortar and online gaming. And although I'm not directly overseeing that, from most of the evidence that I have seen and conversations with the leadership there, is that online gaming is actually enhancing bricks and mortar, because it's bringing more people into the gaming universe, and by creating their loyalty to the online gaming, they are now they then go on to visit the bricks and mortar. You know, is this going to be a area of proliferation in the future? I have no doubt that it will be. We're not facing it right now. We do a play for fun site here in Connecticut, and we do find that people that use our play for fun site do ultimately visit our property who have never been guests before. So we're actually gaining some guests that we hadn't had before that are finding our website.
That's great. Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you for the questions.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
Thank you.
Great stuff.
It's fantastic stuff.
Yeah. Hello, this is Tino Magdata. Do you have a question for Ray?
I think that might be me up. Gentlemen, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Terrific. This is Lincoln in Miami. First of all, just thank you so much for the wealth of knowledge that you've shared with us tonight, Ray. It's been very inspiring and very knowledgeable. And listening to your leadership philosophies, I can definitely see why you've seen this level of success. So congratulations to you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Very welcome. Listening to the earlier part of the interview and your story about your own growing up and coming up in the world, it sounds as though you are the epitome of the American dream. Your experience, how has that affected the experience that you hope to supply for your guests?
I think that, you know, in growing up and having a loving, caring family, a very supportive family, you know, what I look to provide for my guests is a fun, exciting, entertaining experience. And I think that, you know, our whole team works hard to make sure that they're enjoying that experience. I think that, you know, one thing I learned from very young and I've kept with me to this day is I'm exceptionally humble. And I think humility goes a long way with team members in following you and willing to follow your direction. And I think it goes a long way with the guests when people show humility that, you know, there is no arrogance here. There is no, you know, we're better than you. This is, you know, we are your neighbors. We are part of your community. We live, eat, and breathe in the same space, and we want our guests to be part of our family.
Good. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yep,
that's I have a couple more questions. I don't want to monopolize the time, but I hope I might be able to get
it. No, go ahead. We have time. Go ahead.
Excellent. Go ahead. So having the opportunity to speak to someone in your position who obviously has been with the company for so long and had such levels of success, I'm always interested to find out what your take is on the changes that we see in different industries today. So meaning that I believe personally that we've seen so many changes in such a short period of time, especially based upon the proliferation of technology in our world. So who would have thought back when MySpace came out that it would have been basically something that's no longer even used, with it as big as its splash was. And we've seen now that, you know, obviously there's been Facebook, there's been Vine, there's been Instagram, there's been all these things that have come and gone. How does seeing what other industries go through affect your decision-making on a day-to-day basis?
I think that one of the things that that we've adopted as an organization, or at least I have as a leader in this organization, is, you know, you have to stay up with technology, right? So there's so many businesses, you know, it doesn't matter where it is, whether it's retail, whether it's whether it's the auto industry, whether it's you know, the airline industry. We've become a very data-driven society, and having information is king, and you are able to use that information, and you can manipulate that information and understand how people react, and all that is really important. But I think one thing that we focus on here is that we want to be on the cutting edge of technology, not the bleeding edge. I think when you get on the bleeding edge is when you start creating guest dissatisfiers, because people may not understand the technology may not be proven, the technology might break down, and you may be putting in what sounds like the greatest and newest and shiniest of toys, but if it doesn't work, all you're doing is upsetting your guests. If it doesn't give you the results that you thought, then you're just upsetting your team members. So I think that, you know, from a technology perspective, we want to be on the cutting edge of technology, so we're able to offer the best technology that provides the greatest guest experience, not the bleeding edge where things could go wrong.
Very exciting. Mm-hmm. I have at least one more if you don't mind.
Yeah, one more is good.
All right, terrific. So I'm very interested in, you know, speaking about the changes that have come about. Nightlife seems as though it's a huge part of the casino resort experience, you know, in Vegas and other places, much like Mohegan Sun. I'm curious to find out what your thoughts are on that. And also, too, you mentioned gaming in the nightclub, which I found to be completely interesting. So I'm not sure if you're at liberty to be able to speak a little bit on that, as well as any other innovations that we could probably see coming up in the future.
Yeah, I think nightlife is very important in a resort operation. I mean, we need to be able to provide our guests with entertaining experiences outside of gaming. Gaming, as I said, you know, early on, is a commodity. What are the other things that are going to attract guests here? And in the interim, while they're doing that, what are they going to, you know, they can take the opportunity to then go and game. So I think having those nightlife experiences is very, very important to us. And we're continuing to develop our nightlife, and we're constantly evolving on our nightlife experience. You know, I think that, you know, you can look as an example, MGM did it with their product out there where they offered the stadium gaming inside a bar atmosphere. I think we're taking it to a new level. We're going to be opening something coming in June that's going to be a high-end nightlife experience. It's going to offer some gaming options for guests. I think we're looking, you know, one of the things we have to focus on, you know, we've talked about the younger generation. Obviously, our slot players tend to be older players. We're looking for interactive experiences where friends can come and be entertained together, because that's what I think a lot of the younger generation is looking for. So when we think about our nightlife, we actually segment it by age groups and you know, not to stereotype, but certain age groups are looking for certain things. You know, certain age groups are looking for the pounding, rapping, loud music. Others are looking for a more loungy experience, and others are looking for more of a DJ dance experience. And I think that to appeal to the various age levels and guests that could be visiting the property, we need to be offering nightlife opportunities that covers that spectrum to attract as many guests as possible.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks so much. Great questions. Thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Ray?
Aloha, Tino. Mike Ka'ahanui. How's it going?
Good, good.
And so, hey Ray, you know, great show. I think you're offering, you know, just a lot, you know, great, you know, great tidbits out there. I think everybody kind of learns from that story. I got just a, you know, the kind of question that I've been in the business for a while, and I always like to wonder, you know, who were the, and I may have missed it, but who were the, you know, the mentors in that really stuck out to you that you brought with you in terms of the lesson that they taught you through your career early on, and then how do you now identify that when you move forward for succession planning and really hope to identify that next breed of leader, but in the same token, pass on the things that you had learned from your mentors?
That's a great question. I was very fortunate. Very early, you know, we didn't touch upon this very early in my career. I worked for one gentleman when I was in the finance industry who had been a leader in an office leader and worked with me for several years in the early part of my career, who was really kind of building me up to advance my career early on. When I got here to the Mohegan Tribe, the CFO who was here before me was a great mentor and leader who I learned a tremendous amount of hard work and ethic and proving myself. And then, you know, when I finally got down here, I had the great pleasure of having the CEO, who was Mitchell Ettis, as a mentor. And, you know, they've all taught me different things along my path and my career. And I think they've all been invaluable to getting me to where I am today. You know, as far as succession planning, that is something we are constantly working on. We're constantly looking for leadership traits. We call it the Mohegan Way. We call it the spirit of Aquay. And we expect all our leaders to be exhibiting those traits. You know, we have, or I am fortunate to have three leaders here who've been with the organization. The shortest one is 16 years. They all exhibit those traits. And it's a matter of, you know, where are they in their careers and what are the next steps they want to make to move forward in their careers. I think that I have three tremendous leaders here that I've been fortunate enough to work with that when they're ready and the opportunities arrive, we'll be able to move on to another level within the organization.
Hey, that's fantastic, and always great to have that bench strength. Hey, Ray, thank you for the time, you know, and continued success to you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Mike. All right.
Aloha.
Good stuff. Aloha. Obviously, he's Hawaiian.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. I've known him for a long time. He's goes back to the late 90s and my old Vegas days. I think time for one more. Yeah.
Okay.
He's a good friend. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Ray?
Good afternoon, Tino and Ray. Steve Neely, Rolling Hills Casino out in California. Great
hey, Steve,
show,
how you
as
doing?
Always, Tino. Great, thank you. So, this is the one day a year where everyone gets serious and thinks for a minute about our impact on the Earth with it being Earth Day. I thought it would be interesting to find out what type of sustainability programs you have there at Mohegan Sun.
Oh, that's a great question, because I was actually just doing a team member vlog, we call it today, that we post for team members. And we were actually talking about Earth Day, and we were talking about the importance of everybody to do their part to, clean up the world and keep it clean. One of the things that is very important to the tribe is, is participating and keeping their little part of the world clean. We talked about things like just simple things. We last year had 1.4 million tons of soap in our hotel recycled to form, melted down to form new soap. We had, they gave me the stats today, I think it was 1 million bottles of plastic recycled for hygiene containers. We take all of our food waste that's collected, and we actually donate it to a pig farm in Preston, Connecticut, to feed the pigs to not throw out food waste.
Good food.
We obviously, pardon me?
Yeah, good food. Why waste it, right?
Well, the pigs will eat just about anything. So, if our guests aren't eating it, rather than throwing it away, we'll give it to the pigs and let them be sustainable. Things like in our hotel rooms, we have automatic sensors. So we lower the temperature to what many would consider an uncomfortable temperature until the room's occupied. And then the heat will automatically kick on, and then it kicks on at a reasonable level. You have to manually move it up if you want it higher than that. When the room is unoccupied, it goes back down. We recycle all of our paper. So all of our offices, all of our hotel rooms, all of our gaming areas all have plastic recyclable and paper recyclable bins throughout the property so that we can recycle it. So, years ago when the tribe was looking at carbon emissions, they actually spent money and resources on building a tree farm of clinky trees in South America to offset the carbon emissions on the property. So it's something the tribe is constantly looking at, something that the organization as a whole is concerned about, and something that we make sure that we're good partners in providing a clean, sustainable world.
Well, you're obviously doing a great job, and you've got a beautiful facility up there, so congratulations on everything.
Well, thank you, Steve. Appreciate the question, too.
You bet.
Thanks, Steve. Have a great evening.
Thanks, you too.
Well, Ray, we've run out of time, but I've got to say it's been amazing. Great show. I'm glad you were able to come on and share your wisdom and your philosophies to everybody. And for all the people that didn't get to ask questions, we just ran out of time. But you can text me some stuff, and I'll see if Ray has some time to answer it. But, Ray, want to get you back on, because I know a lot of people had more questions, and thank you so much.
Well, Tino, thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure, and, hopefully we can catch up again sometime.
We will. Thanks, and have a great evening.
Thanks. You too. Bye now.
Okay, bye. Okay, that was fantastic. Ray is unique. And now we all know why he's running the joint, so to speak, but also humble and always learning. So my next show is May 2nd with Harold Bogus, he's CEO of Isleta. But and the reason why it's May 2nd is because we're going to be at the, next week we're going to be at the Tribal Hotel and Development Conference, Native Nations, out in Akron, out in Phoenix, just outside of Phoenix. And I have a panel there. I'm going to be speaking on the future of marketing. And I hope that anybody who's out there who's can attend will come. And remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen. Have a good night, everybody, and we'll see you May 2nd.